Welcome to the Simple Money, Simple Life podcast. I am Matt Erickson and I'm your host. This is a podcast where we explore how simplicity beats complexity, especially in money matters. We explore investing, personal finance, and how to live a simple and awesome life. Welcome to podcast episode number 2, titled Why Simplicity in Personal Finance. This is a topic that's near and dear to my heart. So when my wife and I first got married, we moved up to a place called Sandpoint, Idaho. It's a beautiful lake town next to a beautiful lake called Lake Pendere, nestled between a mountain range near Canada. It's way up north. And we lived up there for the first few years of our marriage and really had a lot of great experiences. One time when we were living up there, we had the opportunity to go help someone who happened to be in need of some help. And we went over to their house that night and we walked into their house, and I'll always remember this. It was very cluttered. There was stuff everywhere. There were stacks of newspapers and magazines. There was smells of cigarette smoke and dogs, and it was hard to even find a place to sit down. And Something else that stood out to me on that night was there was a ferret, and those of you who don't know what a ferret is, please Google it, running through the house with a small dog chasing it. Apparently, they were both pets, and this was something normal in their household. I found it quite unique and quite hilarious watching this dog chase this really fast ferret through this house. We stayed in the house for about an hour, working through some issues with the family, and it felt very claustrophobic and just stressful, heavy. And I remember when we walked out on the patio that night after leaving the house, it was a dark night, the stars were out, it was cold. I just remember breathing in the fresh air and feeling a sense of just relief and feeling so good to be outside, away from that kind of cluttered environment. And so as we think about this concept, it's one thing that is true is that when we live in a cluttered environment or an environment where it might be a hoarding situation or with just a lot of stuff, it's been proven by scientific research that a lot of people have high cortisol levels and stress responses while they live in that kind of an environment. It can be very hard on the psyche, on the emotions, on the body. And as they've researched people with hoarding disorder, they found that this is very common. These people have a lot of anxiety and depression, and the clutter seems to have a heavy effect on them as a person. Now, on the opposite side, they've also found that living in a more light environment, fewer possessions, more breathing room, more space to walk around, people feel a more calm sense and more freeing sense. So if this is true, then why in general do we tend to be so infatuated with seeking more decorations, more knickknacks, more toys, more furniture, more stuff, more cars? And this is not meant to be an offensive statement, but I need to say it anyway. Have you noticed how as you drive through a neighborhood that often you'll see houses that where the garage is full of stuff? That does not include the vehicles. So you'll have piles of boxes and containers and totes, but the cars will be parked in the driveway. I have to assume that the car is the more valuable asset than the things that sit unopened in boxes. And so as we think about that, it's like, why? Why do we clutter ourselves with so much stuff? And as you think about a newborn child that comes into the world, kids tend to be, I think, born with a more simple way of being naturally. They tend to just, in the first year of life, they just need parenting. They need love. They need time. As they get a little older into toddlerhood, a lot of times kids are the most happy when they're playing with a stick or playing on the beach or playing in the dirt or playing with a box or a simple toy. Yet, when a child is born or when they have their first birthday, how often do we see people raining down gifts upon them, as if they're supposed to enjoy these things, clothes that they'll never wear, toys that they'll never play with. It's just fascinating to me to see that phenomenon amongst us as human beings, that we feel like we have to shower kids with stuff and they don't want it. It's more filling our own need than it is the child's. So if this is all true, I pose the question, shouldn't we be seeking less in life instead of more? Shouldn't we be considering simplifying our lives instead of making it more complicated and complex in possessions and in other ways? Just like talked about in this story that I shared, a financial simplicity also brings a sense of calm, a sense of assurance. It tends to lower the stress level. Having fewer accounts, fewer bills, less debt, fewer obligations, less need to accumulate possessions and acquire things. This is a way to bring as financial simplicity into our lives that brings peace, calm, and a sense of happiness. There's a saying that's called Occam's Razor. And he was a theologian, William of Occam, and his theory has been used in helping great thinkers and businesses for centuries. And it is this: the simplest solution is almost always the best. And so today's podcast is going to be dedicated to Occam's Razor. The simplest solution is almost always the best. And we are going to walk through 11 great strategies on how to keep your personal finances simple. Number one, have an emergency fund. Most recommend a 3 to 6 month emergency fund. Now, some people like to ask, well, how do I determine if I go with a 3 month or 6 month or 12 month? Some kind of guidelines that you might want to consider. If you are a dual income family with stable jobs, predictable expenses, not a lot of variation in your lives or in your income, a 3 month emergency fund might just be fine. If, on the other hand, you're a one income household, maybe your income varies based on commissions or sales positions, maybe the jobs might be less stable or dependent on what's going on in the economy, then a longer, more maybe a 6 month emergency fund might be more appropriate. And I call this the sleep well at night fund. I have a very anxious coworker who loves to have a very big emergency fund. His life seems to revolve around it. He's got over 20 grand in there and he's very proud of it. So, that's his sleep well at night fund, which is great. He's been a dedicated saver to get to a point where he can have that much money. And I commend him for it. We're kind of weird. We do compare finances, he and I at work, and compare emergency fund numbers and whatnot. Anyway, it's fun. A lot of you might think we're crazy, but that's just how we are. So the main thing is to have enough money in there, that it gives you peace of mind, that you sleep well and don't worry about it. The dangers of maybe having too much in emergency fund might be that you lose money that could be growing in the market. And by the market, I will explain that in a future episode. Remember to keep in mind that this is 3 to 6 months of expenses, not 3 to 6 months of salary. Because when you truly have a job loss or an emergency, there's certain things you can suspend in your life. You could suspend investing for a while. You could stop eating out. You could discontinue Netflix or YouTube TV or other discretionary items. So it's a matter of getting down to your bare bones. What really do you need? And that is how you determine what your emergency fund should be at. An emergency fund is awesome because it helps prevent stress. It helps you feel more at ease. It helps you to not go into credit card debt. It helps you if you happen to have a job loss. We had a personal experience in our household recently where our water heater went out and we needed a new one. It's something we needed pretty immediate. And so it was stressful, of course, to have to replace something like that and pay a lot of money for it. But it wasn't too terribly stressful because we have an adequate emergency fund. And we're able to use that emergency fund in this situation, which is what an emergency fund is for. Now, a lot of people like to ask, where do I keep my emergency fund? Do I keep it in cash bills under the mattress in a safe? Do I use a brick and mortar bank? Do I use an online bank? I'll tell you what I like to do. I like to use the online banks. I use a bank called Ally Bank. I use them because they pay a higher interest rate than my brick and mortar bank pay. So I run all my finances through the brick and mortar, but I keep my emergency fund in Ally Bank because it pays close to 1% interest instead of 0.01% interest like my Wells Fargo account pays. So I would recommend you use an online bank for that reason. Also, I like it because it kind of feels like it's a little farther away, so you'll be less inclined to rate it for non-emergency purchases. Ally Bank has a very slick interface. It's very easy to use. I've had a great experience with them. You can set up sub-accounts in your account to save for certain items, and I've had nothing but a great experience with them. Some people like to use a credit card as their emergency fund or a home equity line of credit. I personally don't feel comfortable doing that, so it's not my style. It may work for other people, but it's not mine. Now let's move on to concept number two, which is try to keep $1,000 in your checking account at all times to avoid overdraft fees. I haven't always done this. It's something I'm going to work on to do. I think it provides you a nice buffer in case you forget about some things that go in there. Keep in mind that overdraft fees is a $34 billion deal. That's how much we paid as Americans in 2018 for overdraft fees, $34 billion. This basically is because people overspend, they don't stay vigilant in their finances, and they spend more than they have in their checking account. That's what causes an overdraft fee. I actually had an overdraft charge recently due to a miscommunication with someone I wrote a check to. And one thing to keep in mind with overdraft fees is most of the time, if you call them, at least my experience has been they will take away the fee. Every time I've had an overdraft fee, which has probably been, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 times maybe in my life, I've called up the bank, explained the situation, and they erase the fee. So a phone call can save you $20 or $30 if you're just willing to give them a call and touch base with them. The next concept, number three, is I call it the touch it once philosophy. I don't believe in, you know, looking at an email, then going on to the next one, then going on to the next one. I like to read it once, take action, move on, so I don't have to keep coming back to it. Same thing with bills. When I get a bill, I like to pay it immediately rather than stick it in a drawer or put it in a file holder or something like that. So the touch it once philosophy helps keep things simple. You pay things immediately. Things don't stack up on you, etc. Principle number four is one of my favorites. It's called automate your investments. We'll have a whole show on this later, but I just want to briefly touch on it now. So some investments that I use are a 401k fund at work. Those are plans sponsored through work where you can take money out pre-tax typically and save it into a mutual fund, which I'll explain what that means later too, for the future, for retirement. I also use an IRA, which stands for Individual Retirement Arrangement or account. And it is something you can contribute $6,000 a year to if you're under 50 or under. And it is something I use a Roth IRA, which means that was named after Senator Roth, who came up with this. But anyway, a Roth IRA is something where you make money, you pay the taxes on it, and then you invest money into your Roth IRA. So the tax has already been paid, which means it grows tax-free so that when you take it out in retirement, you owe no taxes on it. It's a great strategy to combine with a traditional 401k so you have flexibility in the future. And the other way to invest is through a taxable account or brokerage account. I will explain what that means in an episode coming soon. Another concept on automate your investments, only invest in things that you understand and could explain to one of your children. Things like options or futures, puts, calls, day trading. Those are concepts that are pretty complicated in investing in finance. So if you can explain what a stock and a bond is or an index fund or a mutual fund, then those are things you should invest in. If you can't really understand or explain what those are, you'll be able to soon if you stay tuned, because I'll be explaining that very soon in an upcoming episode. Now, when people, there's an app called Robinhood that a lot of people have been using. I think when the pandemic hit, people got bored, they stopped, weren't able to watch sports and do other things, and so they started to get entertained by the stock market, and they started investing in individual companies in Robinhood. Now, I view this more as speculating and even possibly gambling. I know a lot of people will be furious with that statement and disagree with me, but that's how I see it. Quick story. My parents owned a single stock of a bank back for many years and had a lot of money tied up in that one company. When 07 through 09 hit, the great financial crisis, that stock went from $80 a share to $20 a share, and it has not really recovered. That's why single stock investing is dangerous, and it could be considered speculating or gambling. I recommend more broadly diversifying, which I will explain later. The next concept we're going to talk about is number five, which is to use one or two credit cards. I've seen people pop out their wallets that are stuffed full of 10, 15, 20 credit cards. I believe in having one or two, typically. I use the Fidelity credit card. I get double points on every dollar I spend. And what I do with that money is I let it sit there for a year, and then I use it to help fund my Roth IRA, which is an awesome way to save money for investing. So one other awesome thing about putting most of your money on one credit card is you can go online and you can look and track your spending very easily. You can see where you spent your money, what your patterns are, and you can also get insurance protection on your purchases through many credit cards. There's a lot of perks that people don't know about in using a credit card. Now, there's a gentleman named Dave Ramsey that you've probably all heard about. He discourages use of any kind of credit cards. This is one area where he's right with maybe a general audience or with people who pay interest on credit cards. My advice is for people who are responsible with their money and can handle a credit card and will use it appropriately. If you find yourself paying interest on your credit card, then it's probably better to use a debit card or cash. If you can pay it off every month, then a credit card can give you great tools. It can give you lots of protections, lots of organization. It's a lot easier than cash. It's not as dirty as cash. It's less bulky to carry around. Just a lot of benefits to it. I pay my credit card off every 2 weeks instead of every month, just as a way to treat it more like a debit card so that the fee doesn't get too large. Research shows that people spend more with a credit card than with cash. However, I think this is purely a psychological game. I think if you can get in the habit to train yourself to treat a credit card like cash, it's very doable. I feel like that's the way my wife and I do it. I don't think we spend more because we use a credit card. If you can avoid taking out store credit cards, I would recommend that. I think they typically have very high interest rates. They can pop up on you and add up quickly. They try to manipulate you into getting one of those to save on a current day purchase. And I would recommend against those. I just don't think they're necessary. And I think they're you don't get your bang for your buck. I can keep all my cards in a little mini wallet. It's very convenient to carry around. It's very easy to keep track of what you have so that if you lose something, you know you lost it. Strategy number six is to have a plan for your property taxes, your school fees, vacations, Christmas gifts, things that pop up consistently but rarely. And so those infrequent, consistent purchases, we want to have a game plan for so that they don't pop up on us and devastate us when they come. Number seven is to speak and communicate with your spouse often. I'm blessed with an awesome wife, and she's not nearly into money as much as I am. She's not interested in it. I think it's a blast to talk about and read about and study about and listen to podcasts about. She's not so intrigued, but she's super nice and she's willing to communicate with me about money often. We're able to have money meetings together, typically about once a month. We're able to set goals together, plan together, dream together, decide where we want to go on vacation, how much we want to spend, how much we want to invest. And having a spouse where you're on the same page and can have the same vision together is just an awesome feeling. And it's the opposite of the couple who gets divorced because they're hiding money or having financial infidelity with each other or overspending or whatever the case may be. Number eight is to find out what kind of budgeting strategy works best for you. So We personally use what I call a spending plan instead of a detailed budget. And the difference is that a spending plan is simply to decide how much you're going to invest and save and cover that first and then spend the rest. It's very simple. It's very basic. It's what works well for us at this stage in our life. Now, for people who are more starting out early or find more detailed budget categories to be more helpful, that's great. They're both valuable ways to go about it. You just have to find whichever one works best for you. Strategy number 9 to keep personal finance simple is to know how to distinguish your needs versus your wants. We get kind of trapped sometimes in cognitive biases with ourselves about thinking that we need something because someone else has it. We want to keep up with the Joneses. We think we need it maybe emotionally or psychologically. And when we really step back and think about it, we just want that item. So keeping, before we purchase something, just asking ourselves, is this a need or a want, is a great simple strategy that will help keep us on track. Number 10 is to spend less than you make. Avoid debt whenever possible, especially high interest debt. The average interest rate for credit cards in America is 17.89%. That is a lot of money and very hard to keep track of if you rack up a pretty high credit card bill. I think the average, I don't have this stat specifically, but I think the average credit card debt per person in America per adult is around $7,000. So imagine that with a 17.89% interest rate, you can get buried in a hurry. So my strategy is credit card companies are taking advantage of a lot of people. My strategy and my thought process is I'm going to make money off the credit card companies. I'm going to get the free cash back from them. Rachel and I, my wife and I, went to Italy thanks to our credit card rewards a couple years ago. So it's what I call the old switcheroo. We make money off of them rather than they make money off of us. And last point, number 11, is remember that money is a tool. It's a tool to provide us with experiences, to provide necessities, to help us survive and thrive. Consider before making big purchases that can complicate your life. I'm not telling you not to do these things, but consider thinking through very carefully and talking with people about buying extravagant vehicles or about getting into a vehicle lease or a country club membership or a big name brand anything or things that are purchased in a way to keep up an image or for something along those lines. Those are the 11 tips that I came up with to keep your life, financial life, simple. That will be all for today's episode. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the podcast. Please go to your favorite podcast platform and leave a 5-star review and subscribe to the show. And remember, the simple life is a good life.